My name is Rebecca Thomas, and I'm alcoholic. And it is my privilege to serve as your area delegate. And you know, when Deborah was talking about this topic, unity, recovery, and service, and how this works in my life, when I first got to AA, I mainly went to discussion meetings. I wasn't really involved. I was involved in a group, but not really involved in a home group. I wasn't real good at sponsorship and those parts of the program. And through a series of events, I landed into a very strong sponsorship group and a very strong step study. And I'm eternally grateful for those women and that step study. But that's where I learned service work. And that was also where I started with intergroup. That was also where I started with a business meeting. Now, at that time in my life, I worked in the hospitality business. So I didn't know anything about business meetings or anything like that. So at the same time, I was also put in the corporate world. So through going to business meetings in Alcoholics Anonymous and saw what went on there and how you behaved and that kind of stuff, also taught me how to operate in a business meeting at my job. Now, you also taught me how to be a member of my family through working the steps, making the amends, and carrying out the part of the 12th step of carrying these principles in all our affairs. I brought this into my family. Now, I don't have children. I let my brother do that. But I have two great nieces and an awesome nephew. Now I have two little great nieces that are 2 and 4. So how does that work today, serving as your delegate? Well, calendars have to be planned out about 6 weeks in advance. And everything for the area that I'm required to be at goes on my calendar first thing, very first thing above anything. And then secondly comes my family stuff, because without them, I have to have it all. It's just kind of like the circle that goes around the triangle. Because unity for me is unity with you. It's unity with my coworkers, and it's unity with my family. Because I need them all. I need all that support for financial support. I need the support of you for recovery, and I need the support of my family as a family member. So for me, that's practicing all these principles in all of my affairs is how I have to pull all that together. If I get too lopsided, if I get too heavy in service, and I'm not practicing the steps, then I get to be a grumpy person at a business meeting or think I'm too cool for school. Now, fortunately, I have a very strong home group that they're real quick to let me know that I am not the delegate, I am just a member of my home group. And they will very lovely, kindly let me know that. So I'm very grateful for those ladies. Well, actually, we have some guys that will real quickly put my place. So, and in my family, you know, I'm just a family member. I am Aunt Becca, you know. I am now the great aunt, you know. And so I like being the cool great aunt to bring the noisemakers. You know, I like that job. You know, I like hosting the annual Easter egg hunt. And that no matter what, you know, when I was preparing for conference, we still had the annual Easter egg hunt because that was one thing I wasn't going to give up. And so for me, that's what it has to be about. Is to practice in all of my affairs. And that's about the way I have to sum up unity, recovery, and service. So with that, I'll pass it on. Actually, I'll pass it on to Leanne. Okay.
Hey, everybody. My name's Leanne. I'm grateful to be an alcoholic. I'm also your Area 16 chairperson for PICPC, which stands for Public Information Cooperation with Professional Community. Yay. Okay. So thank you. You know, when I introduce myself in Alcoholics Anonymous, I always say my name's Lee and I'm grateful to be an alcoholic. And I learned early on that gratitude is not a feeling, it's an action. And that's why I do service. AA has repaid my life back. I have a life today. I grew up in Alcoholics Anonymous, which I'm very honored to be able to say that. I got sober before I was legal to drink, so y'all taught me a lot. And from the very get-go, I was involved in some type of service. Early on, when I was newly sober, my job was to give old members rides to meetings. And that what a great opportunity that was for me. I got to learn a lot about the history of my district of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I got a lot of wisdom, and that was very beneficial. Also, at my very first home group, we had real coffee cups and real ashtrays, and we got to wash them, and I guarded that sink, and that was my sink, and there was three other ladies that were washing dishes with me, and they were all about 60 and 70 years old, and I was 20 at the time, and they truly taught me how to wash dishes. I didn't know how to wash dishes or vacuum when I got AA. That was not on my list of things to learn how to do when I was growing up, I guess. So you guys taught me that. From that, it kind of morphed. Probably about a year into sobriety, we started a thing in Georgia called Geeky Paul, and that was pretty interesting. And we had to get a lot of input, or I got a lot of input from my sponsor, and we got a lot of input from folks in the area, or in especially in my district, that were involved in Alcoholics Anonymous, and they put me into traditions, and that was really important for me. But I kind of got the service bug, and so I started going to the assemblies early on, and one of my first things at the assemblies I did, it was probably about 20 years ago, if anybody was there, we dressed up like a bunch of grapes, and you remember that? We dressed up like a bunch of grapes and ran through the assembly passing out grapes around subscriptions, and that was fun when you're young and dumb. I don't think I'll be doing that anytime soon now. But I kind of grew up here, and I grew up in AA, and I grew up in the service structure of Alcoholics Anonymous, and Rebecca was talking about that unity, and she was talking about her family and how it has helped and all of that respect. And the advantage of that, about 7 years ago, I had the opportunity to adopt a wonderful little girl, and a lot of you guys are her family in Alcoholics Anonymous. From all over the state, she walks into these places, and she thinks she owns it, and y'all tolerate her, and I appreciate it. And it's just a great family atmosphere, if you will. I mean, it's a bond. I heard early on that the story about the chips, and I like this, and it makes a lot of sense to me. Like in the middle of the chips, it's really smooth, and on the outside of the chips, it's real rugged. So if you stay in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous, more than likely your sobriety will be pretty smooth, but if you veer out and you don't repay what you've got here in Alcoholics Anonymous, it kind of gets rocky. And that's been my experience. When I'm in the middle of AA, I pretty much have smooth sailing, and that's a good thing. Also, like Rebecca, and I appreciate you saying that. Again, I got sober young. I had no idea how to act in the real world, so I knew how to act when I got into the real workplace and had to start going to corporate meetings and everything. I kind of knew how to act because I learned that in Alcoholics Anonymous. So I guess what my experience is that if I wouldn't have gotten involved in service, probably wouldn't still be around. I don't know, probably wouldn't be sober. I wouldn't have the quality of life I have, for sure. Wouldn't have the friends I have, for sure. And it just brings my heart, just overfills with gratitude. Going to assembly and being a part of and doing different service positions, sometimes when you're in the middle of it, whether you're a GSR, DCM, convention chair, a committee chair, or whatever, it gets overwhelming at times, and you're like, oh my. But then the reward at the end, or in the middle, or when you see somebody's eyes light up and they get it, it's the feeling is better than any drink I ever had. That's why I do it. If you're not doing it, in my opinion, you're shortchanging yourself, and you're shortchanging your sobriety. Probably if you're in this meeting, you're probably doing service. But it starts with your home group. It starts with picking up coffee cups, going early, staying late, chairing meetings. And that's been my experience. So thank you for letting me share. And I'll pass it over here to Jean.
We do questions later, right? Yeah, we'll do questions later. Hi, everybody. My name is Gene Trevathan. I'm an alcoholic. This microphone scares the hell out of me. It always has. I got sober at a very inawkward age. But I think it was 1986, and I just had my 21st year in the military, and I knew I could retire and draw a check for the rest of my life. And they said, "We think you should stop drinking." And I said, but I ain't three serving yet. You know, I want to serve 30 years. And they said, "No, not unless you get cleaned up." So I was forced to get cleaned up. And I went to treatment. The one thing I got out of treatment was the local community came in and gave us classes on AA, or back then it was called ANA. At least that's what I heard anyway. You know, but being a senior non-commissioned officer with all kinds of time and grade in the military out there, you know what I'm talking about. Nobody could tell me anything. And I had to humble myself to be led around in the hospital by an 18-year-old private. Now, I'm a senior non-commissioned officer, and this little private's leading me around like I was a little boy, and that just got my goat. So I had learned in the very beginning about what humility was. I thought it was humiliation. The Army thought it was giving me an opportunity to grow. And I didn't know that at that time. But I truly am glad that happened, because it got me into service work. And once I got out of that treatment facility, kind of white-knuckled it for a while, and they told me I had to get a sponsor and a home group and all of that. I said, okay. So I got a sponsor and a home group, and it was the best home group I ever had, and it was the best sponsor I ever had. I didn't go to it, and I didn't call him, he didn't call me, and they didn't come get me. So it was the best one I ever had. But when I went to Italy in my last tour overseas, I found out what a God of my understanding is, and it led me back into service again. When I got back from Italy in 1990, I started going back to that hospital that I, you know, graduated out of or commenced from, and started giving back. And I gave back to the soldiers there what was given to me, which was, you know, my story and strength and hope and humility. But service work has kept me sober all these years, and I haven't found it necessary to take a drink of alcohol since, you know, I woke up one afternoon came to one afternoon with my sergeant major on the phone asking me why I wasn't at work. And of course, I don't work on Saturdays. Of course, Sergeant Major told me it wasn't Saturday, it was Friday. So I had missed a day of work. And being a senior non-commissioned officer, I never missed a day of work, because I always gave myself the day off. You know, you wake up really bad with a hangover and everything, I'll take the day off. So, but service work, we talked about cleaning ashtrays. I mean, we had a group that had a smoke eater in the middle of it. Some people from Augusta will know, it's the Friendship Group over on Windsor Spring Road, and it had a big smoke eater in the middle of the room. And when that thing wasn't working, okay, the speaker would get up, and as the meeting went on, The cloud of smoke from the top would just come right straight down until you couldn't see their head anymore. You know, you'd have to, the speaker would have to duck down so you could see them, even with the windows open and all of that. So, and cleaning ashtrays, putting up chairs, getting out the books, you know, that was all service work. You know, cleaning the place up, going outside, picking up cigarette butts. And I quit smoking the same day I quit drinking. And don't ever do that. I don't recommend that to anybody, you know, unless you're just, you know, bat crap crazy like I was. So I went outside and I picked up cigarette butts. I hated it. Oh, I despised it. But I love service work. It's kept me sober. It's kept me sane. You know, in the military, the only thing I knew how to do was lead people and kill people. So I switched from killing to leading. And so now I do pretty good. Right, baby? I mean, you know, that's my wife over there. She lets me know when I mess up. Yeah. She's the one that dressed me today. I hope you like it. You know? Real men wear pink. But anyway, I just wanted to tell you that I love Alcoholics Anonymous, and it's given me back my life, and it's given me a new life without going around and taking what you have because I want it. All right? I now give back without, you know, even thinking about it. I don't even think about how much money I got in my pocket and how much I can steal from the family or business or whatever, you know. But service work is one part of that three-legged stool, and recovery and unity, they're right in there too. So, but I think I'll let Tim or Jim, it's the Tim and Jim show over here, let one of them come up and talk with you. Thank you very much.
My name is Jim Turner, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm currently serving as the Area 16 Corrections Chair, and that's been a lot of fun for me. According to my phone, I have 75 days left before I rotate, but I wouldn't want anybody to think I was counting.
Thank you.
No. My sobriety date is August 1st, 2007. And I kind of got a kick out of Rebecca and Leanne talking about, you know, because they got sober fairly young and been sober for a long time and not knowing how to act. And I thought, hell, I was 49 when I got sober and I really didn't know how to act, you know. So as far as the three legacies go, you know, that's recovery, unity, and service. And to me, recovery is based, in the 12 steps. The unity is based in 12 traditions, and service is based in the 12 concepts of world service. And so, for me, they sort of had to come in a specific order. In other words, for me, recovery had to come first, because I'm really of no service to anyone if I'm not sober, you know? And I think that going through the 12 steps caused a profound change in my life. It's like it says in the doctor's opinion, you know, a transformational personality shift occurred, and that was nothing short of a true blessing for me, because I realize now that if something monumental hadn't changed in my life, then nothing would have changed in my life. And I love the 12 steps for that, because it gave me, I never wanted my old life back, trust me. It gave me a new life that was way better than what I could ever have dreamed of. And as far as the unity part of it, you know, as an alcoholic, I do many things poorly. Relationships, probably in the top two. And I think that what I learned from the traditions is really it has to do with relationships. It's my relationship with my wife, my relationship with my friends, my relationship with my business partner, my relationship with my home group, my relationship with my co-chair All of these different relationships are possible now in my life because of the 12 steps and because of the 12 traditions. And I think, you know, AA, because of AA, I have a marriage. And because of the traditions, I have a very happy marriage. And I think that's really neat that my wife and I, she's an Al-Anon member, and she's a service junkie. And so we actually practice the traditions in our marriage. And one thing, when I got an opportunity to work at the area level, you know, we have these meetings, and we talk about all kind of things from, you know, group situations, district situations, zone situations, area situations, all these different things. And it's amazing to me how everything always gets resolved, and it's generally found in the traditions. We can always go back to the traditions and resolve whatever issue comes up. And I mean, I've heard some pretty crazy stuff. I mean, we're talking like alcoholics here, you know. So from time to time, there's some pretty crazy stuff going to happen, and it always goes back to the traditions, and it always gets resolved. And I think it gets resolved properly because of that. So I think we're very fortunate not only to have the 12 steps, but to also have the 12 traditions. And I love the 12th step. It's probably my favorite. Depends on what hour of what day it is. But the 12th step to me is the one step that we have that outlines and addresses the three legacies. You know, it says, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps. See, that's recovery. We try to carry this message to alcoholics. I love how it says we try to carry this message. It doesn't say we sober anybody up. It says we try to carry this message, and that's service, and practice these principles in all our affairs, and that's unity. My service career started about 1 month sober. I volunteered to be my group's coffee maker, and the guy that was doing it was starting to get a resentment because he'd been doing it for a couple of years. And this is terrible. I probably shouldn't say this from the podium, but I was on probation. And so in Clark County in Athens, where I'm from, they will actually give you community service credit for AA. So being the keen alcoholic that I am, I realized that, you know, if I just go to a meeting, I get an hour of community service. If I get there a half hour early and make coffee, and then stay a half hour later and clean up, I get 2 hours of community service. Therefore, I can finish my community service in half the time. And all I gotta do is go to AA. That's why whenever somebody comes into my group and says, would you sign this paper? I say, absolutely. Because my motive was bad. It was bad wrong. But what it did was it got me in there early, and it got me talking to the people in my home group, and I got to know them because I thought I knew them about what they shared, but that was not really entirely true. When I got to talk to them before the meeting and spend time with them after the meeting and go out to lunch and that sort of thing, that's when I really got into the fellowship. And I remember my sponsor told me at about 6 months sober, he said, you know, you probably ought want to start attending group conscience. And I said, what the hell is that? He said, that's your group's business meeting. It meets, you know, in my district, it's the second Wednesday, or the first Wednesday after the second Sunday, which sounds really alcoholic to me, but it's basically the first Wednesday after the district meeting. And so I started going to group conscience, and my group had a problem in that there was no secretary. Nobody was taking minutes. Nobody was doing really much of anything. And the GSR of the group said, we need a group secretary. And nobody raised their hand. And so I raised my hand and said, I could be a secretary. And she looked at me and she says, how much time do you have? And I said, 6 months. She goes, you're not a trusted servant. You have to have 2 years to be a trusted servant. And I said, okay, sorry. Sorry I brought that up. And so we went without a secretary for, I don't know, another year maybe. But when I was about a year and a half sober, a lady in my home group came up to me and she said, we really need an alternate GSR. And I thought, you know, I played this game before. I don't have 2 years. I don't have enough time. And she says, yeah, but you will. And so at the next group conscience, she said, I'd like to nominate Jim for alternate GSR. And something about the 2 year rule just, you know, vanished, because next thing you know, I was the alternate GSR of my group. And so I got that little pamphlet, you know, it says GSR, perhaps the most important job in AA, and I read that thing, and they started talking about these district meetings and about not only district meetings, but assemblies. And I went to my GSR, and I said, what is this district and assembly type thing? She goes, oh, you don't need to worry about that. And I said, okay. But she said, but by the way, I can't make it to the district meeting next Sunday. Can you go in my place? And I said, yes, ma'am, I'd be happy to. And so I went, and I thought, this is kind of cool. You know, I didn't realize, you know, I was seeing people I knew from other meetings and stuff. But anyway, what happened was they started announcing about assembly in the district meetings, and I went to my GSR, and I said, what's this assembly thing? She goes, you don't need to worry about that. And I said, okay. I said, are you going? She goes, no, I don't go to those things. I don't bother with that. And I said, I'm looking at the pamphlet. I'm going, that's not what it says in the pamphlet, you know? And I said, well, do you mind if I go? And she says, yeah, but we're not paying for it. And I said, that's fine. And so I went to my first assembly. I think it was the May assembly of 2009. And this is kind of what I do. I remember driving back to Athens on Sunday after that assembly, and I just cried the whole way home. I was so overwhelmed. And it was one of the neatest things I'd ever seen in my life. And that was back when David Schaffner and Dick Anderson were doing the GSR or DCM 101 thing. And I sat in there, and they were just spouting all this information. I'm kind of a geek anyway. And I soaked that stuff up like a sponge. And I haven't missed an assembly since. And even after I rotate, I will be coming back to assembly because I love it. So I think that the important thing for me is that triangle we talk about, that is an equilateral triangle, which basically, if I recall correctly from high school geometry, that means that each of those legs is of equal length. And to me, what that means is they're of equal importance. And so if I'm doing recovery and not really doing much unity and not doing much service, something's out of balance. Something's out of kilter. And so I don't do it very well, but I always try to put as much energy into recovery as I do into unity, my relationships, as I do into my service. And so far, it's worked beautifully. Thank you.
I'm Tim. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Tim.
And I am your co-chair for corrections for Area 16. And on the three legacies, I'm one of these individuals that, you know, I realize that my thinking is very, very bad. I have bad thinking. I came into the program with bad thinking. Now, it comes to my job, I'm pretty good at my job, as long as I show up. But when it comes to thinking in general, I'm just purely bad at it. And so the program, you know, has pretty much kept me from drinking since July the 5th of 2006. And, you know, during that period of time, the one thing or some of the things that I have seen that has convinced me that I need to work all three sides of that triangle, you know, I've seen people that could quote the big book, page number, and just paragraph after paragraph. You know, I've seen people that can do that, and I look at them, and I'm like, my God, how do you do that? You know, I mean, quote that book like that, because I don't memorize it, you know? And so these same people, they may come in, they'll quote the book, and then I hear they're out drunk. And I'm like, they're out drunk, but they can quote the book. You know what I mean? Really? They're sitting at the local bar quoting the book. Yeah, really. There are people that do this, you know. And then there, as far as meetings, you know, I see some people and they come and they occupy a seat in Alcoholics Anonymous. In fact, they come quite often. You know, I was a meeting maker. You know, they say meeting makers make it. You know, there's a saying like that. I've seen people fight over that statement. I mean, I really have. I've seen dogfights over that statement. But, you know, I was a meeting maker, but I was one of them meeting makers that did not make it. You know, I was showing up for meetings. I was talking the talk. I was one of these guys, keep coming back one day at a time. You know, that was the way I was. And, you know, I wasn't working no program recovery, and I went back out again. I got really drunk that time. You know, get a little AA, and you let that seed start growing, you'll find out what I mean. And so, you know, I've known people, they come to meeting after meeting, and, you know, I hear they're drunk again. Drunk again. And I'm kind of like, but they were coming to AA. And then I've seen people get up and tell their story. And it was a great story. You know, it sounded like a wonderful story of recovery. They talked about how great life was and all of that. And then within a short period of time, I hear they're back out there. In fact, they're down at the county jail. They're drunk. They got drunk and locked up. And I'm kind of like, but they got up and told their story. Well, see, the one thing I've observed is we can do all three sides of that triangle. I can do any one of those sides of the triangle, but guess what? It ain't going to keep me sober forever. I ain't going to do it. I can quote the big book, but, you know, if I'm not actively working those steps, I'm probably not going to stay sober. I can come to meetings, every meeting, I can occupy space in the AA room, but if I'm not working the steps and I'm not doing service, I'm probably not going to stay sober. And you know, I can get up and tell my story as many times as I want, talk about how great life is. I can do service, but guess what? If I'm not working those other sides of that triangle, I probably ain't going to stay sober. And there's another cliche that has always worked for me. At least it's been working for 8 years now. Hopefully it'll work for more. But, you know, the cliche is, as long as I stay in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous, I will probably not fall off the edges. So 8 years later, after coming into this program, I still work the steps. I work them today because I love to work them. Each time I work them, they have new meaning, they have new color. I still attend meetings. I take 3 prison meetings into the prisons every week. I attend about 3 or 4 home group meetings, and I participate. I share my experience, strength, and hope. And I do service when I'm requested to do service. And you know something? It's worked for me for 8 years. So I reckon if I keep doing it, maybe it'll work for 8 more. Thank you.
Well, don't all applaud at once. My name is John, and I am an alcoholic. Okay, the 3 legacies we're supposed to talk about: recovery, unity, and service. Okay, I guess I could start on my journey in recovery, which did not go very good. Not good at all. It started at a place called Regional Southern Hospital in Riverwoods. And after many visits there, they told me they loved me, but they could not help me any further. Then it was on to Anchor. Boy, many years. Even did a stint there in the detox unit, plus about 6 weeks in what they call the lodge. I met one of my friends from my home group at the Clayton House in Jonesboro. We were there about the same time. I had graduated about the same time. He went to the meeting at the Clayton House. I headed back to Griffin and stopped off at a fat man's bottle shop on the way back. So I took care of that. I ended up at the Coliseum in Macon. Oh, by the way, my last drink was on the morning of March 13th, 2008. There was a problem with that. I didn't know it was going to be my last drink, and I had no intention of it being my last drink. And that was about 11:30 in the morning. And about 3 o'clock that afternoon, this nice gentleman in a brown suit and patent leather shoes with his hand on my shoulders was taking me up to the unit in Coliseum. And that is where this journey started. You know, we are told that the same man will drink again. And Dr. Silkworth talks something, you know, about the psychic change. Now, at that point, I was to the point that maybe I ought to start listening. And there was something else coming into play too, that I was down to two choices. Either go to Turning Point in Moultrie, Georgia, or this place in Milledgeville for 2 years. And I was told I would not like my roommate there. So I took my choice down to Moultrie at Turning Point. And we went through the same drill, you know, hold up your hands, how many fingers, and all this stuff, and complaints and all this, but there was something different about these people. We'd go through our rants and everything, they'd just stand there and kind of smile at you and grin and go walk away. Well, it dawned on me after a while that these people were drunks just like me. So I was at a place where the engines were running the show. And that got my attention. I got involved with a group in Moultrie, the Alamo group and the Alamo Club. And that's where I started my first service work. I was the PIP. And my first job was to go through the local television screen, get all the meeting times squared away, ads in the newspaper, and all this. I did find one thing on this. Our address was a highway and 6th Street, a published address. Well, I was walking up to the meeting one day and happened to look, and that street was 7th Street. And unfortunately, the published address was the address of the liquor store in Moultrie. It's on the same corner, just down one block. We got that squared away. I don't know when or what the psychic change occurred. I didn't know it at the time, but the Alamo group, they kind of crossed all the T's and dotted their I's. I was in a training program. And they went. They'd load us in the cars, take us to what they call the every month all the groups in the district would get together and have a heating meeting. And from different assignments at the club, mopping the floors, cutting the hedges, painting the bathrooms and things like this. So I was down there for 9 months. And got back, went back to my home group at the Clayton House. And I stood at the door for the longest time. And I didn't know whether to go in there or not, because I had been in there above for years, and I would be there a while and then disappear for months, come back a while and disappear. And this lady kind of walked up behind me, and she was one of the ones that did the practice groups at the Anchor. She'd come in on Thursday nights and do a practice AA meeting. It had been a long time since I've been there. And she looked at me, looked me up and down, standing out there, and said, "John Bash, I'm going to kick your A. Get in there." So I got in there. Sponsor, Hugh H. I learned how to make the coffee. And it just went from there. Now, unity. As long as I tried to do it alone, I stayed drunk. They say what we, you know, we can do for each other, what we can't do for ourselves. And in my case, was picking up that telephone. It weighed 4 tons, and I couldn't pick it up, ask for help, or when something happened, and I stayed drunk. So this is my you know, with Unity and working with the group and in additional and in service work. So that's just about, you know, my journey into service. I got out of Turning Point on December of 2008. And in 2009, I was at the assembly in Macon. An AA at the Clayton House brought me there. And we have missed maybe one or two assemblies since then. And at that first assembly, I was invited to go across the street to the archive workshop at 9:30. And Charlie Y was the archive chair at that time. And his topic was Abby Thatcher. And that meeting is just like it happened yesterday. So I became in the archives, and here I am today. And I have come to the conclusion that things happen in AA, that there is an invisible hand that works with us. Because I have been involved in projects that I have no technical expertise whatsoever. Now, I've had some great help, our demon sitting out there. But things have happened that this dumb drunk have really had no business even attempted. But we do it, and it works out, and it happens. Again, Unity. And the service and the recovery, I don't know how you can really separate them. It's like a three-legged stool. It takes all three together in balance before to make it work. That's all I got. Thank you.
Thank you, that was great. And now it's time for the Ask It Basket, and we all have the questions already, so.
Okay, I got a good one. Why is it that Amen does not conclude the meeting? Tradition 4, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. I've been to a lot of meetings where we conclude with the Lord's Prayer, where the responsibility statement, where the serenity prayer. I could read into this and I know what they're talking about. I personally don't chant. I was just raised differently. But I think when I first got to AA, I think I did chant. I think I kind of grew out of it. Made me feel a part of. But again, I mean, the tradition states each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups of AA as a whole, and I think that chanting is not causing anybody to get drunk. That's my opinion.
Thank you. I'm here for support.
There you go. I needed that. I actually took two questions because they both were on the same exact topic. One was, how do you become a delegate? And two, what does a delegate do? I guess I'd shoo a fly away. Well, we have two great, awesome books that I put in my bag with me to come here. One is the Georgia AA Service Manual, and the other is the AA Service Manual. And a lot of people like to argue, why do we have both? Well, I've come to learn that a lot of areas have a manual similar to this. It is how the area has elected to run their area for those things. So in the AA Service Manual, the Georgia AA Service Manual on page 16, it goes through the qualifications. You know, you need to be sober, 5 years of continuous sobriety, and also reside in the state. You know, they want you to be a GSR, a DCM, be a part of AA in Georgia and how it is ran, because I've come to find out we do it different. And it's not that it's bad. It's basically, it's the same thing as what Leanne just said. Our area is autonomous as long as we're not affecting AA as a whole. And so I served those positions. Now, I personally didn't aspire to, I didn't sit at my first assembly and say, oh my God, I want to be that person. I was not like that. I had someone come up to me and said, hey, I think you'd be great at that. And I said, are you nuts? And he said, no, I think you'd be good at that. So I just stood, and God was in charge, and here I am. And I find myself doing that to people today. As far as what I do, I'm a messenger. You know, the groups are at the top of the triangle. The conference is down here. The ideas and stuff for AA come from the members of Alcoholics Anonymous. That information is sent to the conference. I get a feel through the DCM pre-planning meeting, what's the sense of this area? And most of the time, how you want me to vote is how I voted. But there are times when I get to conference and I hear other people's ideas and what they brought from their area, then it may put something completely different out there. So, but it is once I get to that conference, then it's my responsibility to bring that information back to you. So that information goes back and forth. You know, if you need me to come to a district, I'm open. I'm available to come to your areas, come to your home groups. I've had different people invite me to come. I'm available for you. I serve Area 16. That is what I'm here for. So thank you.
Thank you, Rebecca.
Okay, John, again, I'm still an alcoholic. How about that? Okay, the question is, how do you choose a sponsor? How do I choose a sponsor? In my case, I didn't. It just kind of happened. I had asked several people that I liked or thought we might have something in common. But when the two serious sponsors I had, I guess it was a three-way deal. Me, the potential sponsor, and God. Now I'll report my current sponsor, and you decide. I first met him the first time I went to Coliseum in Macon upon the unit. He was a counselor there, which was the first of many visits. When I finally ended up at Turning Point in Moultrie, he was a counselor in Moultrie, and I was in his group for about 6 months. Okay, after I came back and got involved, he moved back up to Macon, started his own practice, and worked part-time at Coliseum, and this developed that he has been my sponsor for several years now. So. No black and white answer in my case. But again, the higher power, you know, sometimes we just have to let go, and through that's the 11th step, through prayer and meditation. And, you know, God will put, well, I don't know, what I have found out in AA, if we just kind of let go, God will put us where we're supposed to be. Then that's my humble opinion. Thank you.
Thank you, John.
Well, you're going to switch sides on me, all right?
Well, I'm here for support.
Oh, thank you. Hi, everybody. My name is Gene Trevathan. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Gene.
I have a question here. It says, do you have to be sober to chair a meeting? Oh, wait a minute, wait a minute. How long do you have to, how long do you have to be sober to chair a meeting? Sorry. But it does help if you're sober, if you're chairing a meeting. My idea of chairing a meeting comes from your group. You know, we're autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or A as a whole. If your group says you're ready to chair the meeting, then you chair the meeting. And don't miss a business meeting, because it'll be the chair for next month. I can attest to that. But I don't know. It's up to your group, really, how long you have to be sober to chair a meeting. But it does help to be sober, okay? So, thank you.
Got your back. I'm Jim Turner, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Jim.
The question is, what is a DCM, and what do they do? DCM stands for District Committee Member, and the DCM basically is the person that herds all of the cats or the GSRs in the district. Deborah's laughing. She understands that. Now, if you look out there on that little upside-down triangle thing they have with the groups, districts, area, general service, all that kind of stuff, as you come down the triangle that Rebecca was referring to, the DCM is primarily a liaison, I think, between the groups of his or her district and the area and his or her district and the delegate. So according to the Georgia Service Manual, qualifications of DCM include 4 to 5 years of continuous sobriety within the state of Georgia, in parentheses, so that they may be eligible for election as delegate. Experience in group affairs such as secretary, central office, etc., should be able to coordinate and lead, have served a minimum of 1 year as a GSR, engaged in group, district, and state assembly affairs, the time and energy to serve, and I love this, to be well prepared to place principles before personalities. I think for GSR it just says be prepared, right? Right. So we're kicking it up a notch here. Well prepared to place principles before personalities. And basically the duties are pretty simple. Attend and chair regular district meetings. Maintain a current roster of the GSRs in the district and make sure that each group has a GSR, if possible. Receive and consider GSR reports. Discuss group and district affairs with GSRs. Encourage group participation. Be available to assist and guide the GSRs. And also, I know that in the meetings that I've been privileged enough to sit in with the DCMs, a lot, we have two meetings with the DCMs every year at the area level. And one is sort of a planning meeting at the end of the year, and the next one is in the spring where we get to try to prepare the delegate to go to conference. And best I can tell, other than trying to keep all the affairs in order of the district, the DCM is really a liaison that can bring district issues to the area level, to the delegate, to whoever needs to be involved and you know, helping to resolve whatever's going on. And that communication needs to go both ways. So the DCM is responsible for transmitting information from the state assembly back to the GSRs at the district or zone level. And so that's two ways. And then in turn, and in theory, the GSRs transmit that information back to their group members, because everybody, we want an informed group conscience. I love AA because as a group member, I have one vote. Everybody has one vote. Nobody gets more than one, you know, and I can vote in my group. At the assembly, the DCMs do not actually get to vote during the business meeting. The GSRs carry the conscience of the group. So they have one vote to vote their group's conscience. Okay? Thanks.
Thank you. Got your back.
Thank you. I'm Tim. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Tim.
The question I got, and I'll read this. Yeah, no, I was the last guy at the table. Why did they change the color of the big book from red to green, then blue, and never go back to red? That's the question I got. So, you know, I have never thought of that before, ever. And I did some research on this right here. Actually, I ran it on the internet. I did extensive research sitting at the table up here. Apparently, only the first edition was red, which is a very pretty color. If you carry it with you anywhere, everybody's going to know you're carrying the big book. Apparently, it was because of economic reasons, lower cost, believe it or not, so that they could sell the big book to you for less. Apparently, that's the answer I get from the internet, so thank you.
Okay, that's all the questions that were in the basket. Does anybody on the floor have a question they'd like answered? And I think we got the mic that we can set you up with.
Hi, my name is Stephanie, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Stephanie.
What are the concepts?
Good question.
It's in the book.
It is in the book. Ooh, my name's Rebecca McCullough.
Hi, Rebecca.
The concepts are for the guidelines. I'm trying to get an official definition for you, is what I was trying to thumb through instead of just my opinion. So if you'll bear with me just one second, because they're in here. It was when Dr. Bob got ill, Bill W. realized that they were going to have to turn the fellowship over. So in 1951, they did a trial of the General Service Conference, turning the conference over to Alcoholics Anonymous, and in 55, they adopted that. Well, they needed some guidelines and structures for that. So I'm trying to, if you'll bear with me one second, let me see if I can find where the, because I am sure that there is a definition of, the concepts in here, because as we start, that's the charter. Aha, I have a preface in here. Okay, the 12 Concepts for World Service were written in 1962. Over the years, the size of the fellowship and responsibilities of its service entities have grown immensely. Therefore, some details of the original text has become outdated and were changed in different editions of the concept since the time. But the concepts is for how the General Service Conference runs. And the first concept is the final responsibility and ultimate authority of A, World Services should always reside in the collective conscience of our whole fellowship. So the concept goes with how AA World Services is run, but it's also different services. This book, I would guess, we might have it on the literature table. If not, we can get you one. I know Tamara has these at the office. But it goes through the whole introductions of why we have them. And it's the guidelines. It also goes into legal guidelines, financial guidelines for all of AA World Services. Thanks. Great question.
Thank you, Rebecca.
Hi, I'm Deborah, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Deborah.
And I just want to mention real quickly in response to that question, too, there is a wonderful pamphlet on the 12 concepts of World Service that kind of condenses it. And if there's not any out here on the free literature rack, you can get those also from Tamara. But it's real good.
Thank you, Deborah. Any other questions from the floor? No, and then I guess we'll wrap this up. I just want to let everybody know that there is a dolphin tour tomorrow afternoon, at 3 p.m. And if you decide, if you want to go to it, you have to call to reserve it. And if you show them your badge, it's, you get it for a special rate of $20 per person. And I hope everybody can join us tonight for the 8 o'clock meeting. We're going to have a great speaker, Adrian. And if we can go ahead and close this meeting with the Lord's Prayer. And if we want, I think we can get in a circle if we'd like.
Yeah, I know.
Here, I'll get on the end.
Jump down. I need jumping. My knees ain't gonna jump.
I'll fall off.
No, we're not gonna jump. Okay. But you're gonna push it. And who keeps us sober?
Our Father. Hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come. Thy will be done. On earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread. And forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen. Keep coming back. It works if you work it.